Awesome to welcome director of team takeover, Jameel Jones, to the Basketball Podcast. Coach Jones serves as a director with Team Takeover, one of the premier programs on the Nike Elite Youth Basketball League circuit. In this role, he's involved in program leadership, elite player development, and representation of Team Takeover on the national EYBL stage, including high-profile events such as Peach Jam. Jones has built a strong reputation through his work with Nike Team Takeover and his experience in collegiate basketball. With Team Takeover, he has helped guide the program to national prominence, making it one of the elite programs in the world for youth grassroots basketball development. He has played a key role in the development of hundreds of scholarship athletes and future NBA players. He was also part of the staff that captured an EYBL championship, one of the most prestigious titles in grassroots basketball. Jones has also had an extensive collegiate coaching career, serving as assistant coach at Florida Gulf Coast University, Virginia Commonwealth University, the University of Central Florida, and Wake Forest University. He has also served as a skills instructor at the Nike Skills Summit and numerous other grassroots events.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Coach Jones, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. I really appreciate it. This has been a blessing. I know we've talked about it over the last couple of months, so to have an opportunity to be on, I truly thank you.
I'm excited. And maybe Coach Jones is the wrong word now. What are we calling you? Coach Director Jones, Coach Jones, you've done it all. And that's part of why you're here a little bit. I think you can add just so much value to coaches around the world that run programs and organizations. And you've done such an elite job. You're respected by the NBA, by Nike, by so many different organizations. So maybe first just start by give us an outline of what Team Takeover is and how it's set up.
Okay. As you mentioned, I do wear a lot of hats. Currently, I'm serving as the director of Nike EYBL Team Takeover. We were founded in 2009. The inaugural 2010 EYBL Championship, we had the honor of winning it. So we won the first ever EYBL Championship. Our founder and CEO, Keith Stevens, he handed the program over to me a few years ago, and his legacy still lives on. Fundamentally, we're a defense-first program. One thing that we pride ourselves on is our kids play together. So when you think about amateur basketball, AAU, travel basketball, we only have our kids a lot of times in the spring and summer for a small amount of time, 12 weeks. We're blessed because we start a little younger than that, but our high school age groups, you only have them for 12 weeks. So we have to have a culture that will sustain us past the player.
Let's talk about that culture. What is the culture?
Family. I think like when you get families and kids to buy in, everything else is easy. I know for us in this community, we've been around for 17 years. We're integrated in the lifeblood of basketball in the DMV. We have a national brand that transcends us, but fundamentally, our foundation is right here in our community. And I think that's something going back to Keith's vision when he first founded the program under the mindset of just trying to help kids live out a dream and achieve opportunity to go to school and play at a higher level. And I think he's done that, and we're continually doing that to move the program forward.
I've been fortunate. I've had a chance to watch teams of yours at different levels, different age groups. And look, we can say this now at the NBA level. Playing hard is a skill and a separator. If you think about certain NBA teams now, from the coach, the organization, the players, they play hard, and that is the standard. That would be something that stands out for me when I watch a Team Takeover play. Talk to us about how you've shaped that within the organization and within teams.
So I think clearly having the background as a college assistant, right, and now transitioning to running a Nike EYBL program, our core principles when we go in the gym, like everyone else, we help our kids develop offensively, right? So we'll give our skill development portion, whether that's 30 minutes to an hour, maybe hour and 15. But I always emphasize to my parents and my kids, okay, I gave to you. Now it's your turn to give back. I did what matters to you. We rebounded it. We encouraged you. We allow for you to make mistakes. Now it's your time to give back to us. And we start defensively with our station drills, our individual closeout drills. Like we build our defense the same way you build a player offensively. That's one of, I think, the things that I hang my hat on is getting my kids to play hard, play together. But the buy-in, again, is synergy on both ends, right? And that's, to me, the best way to coach.
Developmental age groups. So, how young do you start? And let's call developmental age groups like before 15, 16, 17 when YBL really gets serious. So, talk to us maybe about first, how young do you start? And then, what are some things you're doing within those development age groups to help, again, establish a program, build a program, and then feed some kids potentially into these elite programs that you have at the top?
So on average, and this is a year-to-year thing, on average, we'll start at third grade, right? We have had years when we've had two second grade teams, right? But on average, our grassroots is third through sixth. Our middle school is seventh through eighth. Our high school is ninth through, of course, 11. So that's 15, 16, 17, as you mentioned previously. We're also blessed at the high school level to have three teams represented at each age group. Everyone talks about the EYBL. We have a team takeover showcase, a team takeover national, as well as a team takeover EYBL. And that goes back to the purpose of the program being founded, to give kids an opportunity to continue their basketball careers past high school. So right now we do have second grade, which is a blessing for us. Because you get the families and the kids integrated into the culture and the buy-in starts. And we've been blessed. A lot of our kids have come all the way through the grassroots. As recent as Jordan Smith, a kid who started with us in elementary school, went through middle all the way to high school. We've been blessed to have a ton of guys like that.
So, coaching those age groups, I want to dive into that first. Let's stay with that development age group. Because, again, like we think this is obvious, but there's a lot of high school programs, there's a lot of AAU programs, there's a lot of organizations around the world that don't have this type of development system in place. And especially, as you mentioned, the depth of the teams at the elite level as well, that it's not exclusive to just EYBL. So, I love that. But let's stay at the development level. What are we doing in terms of coaching? Because I know this is something that's been important to you, is having really good coaches at the base.
So at our grassroots level, that's second through six, third through six, we allow for coaches to move up with their kids. So if you come and say, Chris, hey, Jamil, hey, I want to coach third grade. Right, you build that team out. We'll sit and talk about the vision. Clearly, at that age, it's positionless basketball completely. The game has transitioned to that. So a lot of it is five out motion, teaching corner cuts, teaching 45, teaching screening away, right? Simple fundamental basketball principles, right? Sideline break, right? Like advance the ball, like beat teams through player movement, ball movement, and not so much dribbling. Defensively, we teach shell. Right. And again, it's a buildup. It's not, we're not going through the full rotation of a corner drive, crack back, close out. We're not going through all the rotations, but fundamentally, we're teaching shell principles, right? On ball gap, sideline baseline, right? So we are blessed to, one, have a program where coaches come back, like myself, and we help to develop the next coach. And we are also blessed to have coaches that want to be here. So if my third grade becomes fourth grade, becomes fifth grade, becomes sixth, he passes that team off to our middle school seventh grade coach, and he'll be like, all right, Mel, I want to take another group. I want to start over. And we've been blessed to do that. We have had guys move up through high school, not so much in the last couple of years. We've capped it a little bit, but it's been working.
Well, and we've talked about this, and I know that's one of the challenges. Having some of the best coaches possible at the youngest levels obviously drives success at the oldest levels, not just for the development, but for the experience of the players. So talk to us about like those coaches specifically and making sure that they understand the culture of the program. What are the standards? What are you doing to help them understand that this is the way Team Takeover does it? And that's that, because you're dealing with a lot of individuals at those ages, aren't you?
You are. That's a wonderful question. We have some really good guys, right? BJ at the middle, at the elementary middle school level, Ronald at the elementary middle school level, right? But one thing we always try to emphasize is winning isn't important right now, right? As much as we all become fascinated with the status of the social media platforms that some yield to, we don't focus on that. So we may have an event where I might show up. Like I go to sixth grade practice. You might see the director of the program. I coach eighth grade in the fall and winter. I coach our main 17s EYBL team in the summer. And on a random Tuesday, I will walk into a sixth grade practice with no problem. And I will sit in the stands, right? I will be a fly on the wall. I'm not here to give instruction. I'm here to give support. And I always emphasize that to my guys. I'm a phone call away. But at that younger age group, winning isn't as important as development because we still want families to have a good experience, right? And we know that just doesn't come through winning.
It doesn't. And I want you to say that again. And I want to say it again. It's not about winning at those ages. It's about what do they look like at 16? What do they look like at 15? And if we have that big picture, especially with an organization within yours, the development is going to take care of itself because of the culture that you've created from the top to the bottom and the different things that go with it. It's incredibly hard. I know that. So talk to us about the parent piece a little bit in terms of that age group and handling parents and communicating to parents so they know clearly what the message is.
At the younger age groups, believe it or not, parents are really their sponges. As long as you give them the message, right, and you have a plan of development for their kids, which we have 17 years of showing, right? So like our plan is also something that you can go back. We have evidence, but clearly it's case by case. And we have a Zoom for our middle school and elementary, and I'm giving the secret sauce away. We do the academy, which is an 8-week program fundamentally teaching kids how to play basketball, offense, and defense. They have weekly Zooms where we'll have guest speakers come on. A lot of times it'll be a former player or a former coach. So, like, I know Trevor Keels, who's currently with the Miami Heat, right? He's come all the way through and wound up going to Duke as a top 10 player, but he came all the way through. He spoke. We've had former parents come on and speak as far as their experience. And this helps to educate that current parent. That's part of our secret sauce. After that, then that's when we start to build out our teams, especially our younger age groups, right? Second through six, I can carry three teams with no problem if I have an investment of 30 parents and 30 kids, right? Because everything that we compete in, like there's no A, B, or C pool. Like they all can just compete against each other and have a good experience. And that's what we run into. Parents like, look, we just want our kid to get better. If you're telling me you're going to have three teams at this age group, we want to be a part.
And the fact is, and I've coached long enough, and you've coached long enough to know that some of these kids that are on your third or your second team at fourth grade, at fifth grade, they can end up being the best player. And that's the thing we've got to all keep in perspective is it's so nonlinear in terms of development and maturation that we just don't know what they're going to be. So creating a space for them to be able to develop and improve and have a great experience, that's the bottom line for you ultimately, isn't it?
It is. We've had kids go on to be top five scorers in college basketball that spent the bulk of their career like on our second teams, quote unquote, which we don't classify it as that, but I know some may, but it gave them the opportunity to grow and develop. And when their time was to play EYBL 17s, they were ready. James Palmer, who started his career at Miami, who transferred to Nebraska, who's playing high level professional basketball, had a cup of coffee in the league for a little while with the Clippers. He was one of those guys. He came through and he figured it out. Caleb Wilson, who's currently at Georgetown right now, his father's our grassroots director, and Kyle loves to make light of it. Like, Caleb was a second team kid because it gave him a chance to develop. Now, he won Peach Jam in 23 with me, but he also went through it to be in a position now where he's a starter in the Big East as a sophomore.
Incredible stuff. And you mentioned not calling it that team. So, like, it's not an ABC team. So, what are you calling it? Because I think that's such a great point.
So clearly we have our EYBO. EYBO competes on the Nike circuit, right? That is that we are a fully funded sponsored Nike program. With our showcase and our national, they'll play on a different circuit throughout the summer. Depending on which platform that we decide to partner with that respective summer, they'll play on that one. And it just gives kids an opportunity to be seen and to be visualized. That's it. We never use team A, B, or C. They have names. National Showcase, EYBO.
Love it. And one thing that I think is so important, and I think you represent this and your program represents this, is kids do want to be coached. There's this fallacy that top players and the best players don't want to be coached. But all I've seen in my time with great coaches and great programs like yours is a hunger from these kids to get coached. And you do that and you hold them accountable and you coach them. So talk to us about that piece because I think that's really important.
I think it goes back to parenting. I tell as a parent, kids want to be held accountable, right? They'll resist it like we all did. But if nothing else, that level of accountability that you're offering to them, it also shows an investment by you, right? So whether that's my kids not doing their homework on time and me having to communicate that, coaching is no different, right? If you set a standard, now a kid knows where they have to achieve. And with us, I am always going to make you uncomfortable. That's my job, right? I had a conversation recently with a parent whose son is 17 years old. And I'm not a licensed psychologist or psychiatrist, right? But I understand things fundamentally, right? Cognitive, like brain patterns and forming of understanding starts at maybe 4 or 5, right? Cognitive memory. So this kid has been on the earth for 17 years, but he only really has 12 years of experiences. It is my job to make him uncomfortable. Why? Because I have more experience than him. The race that he wants to run, I've ran it. I understand how to get there. But to your point, kids and parents definitely, they want to be coached. They do, but you also have to be able to convey a message and articulate it in a way that they understand it. Yelling and demeaning someone is not always coaching. Like for me, I know I tell all my parents, my practices are going to be very uncomfortable. My practices are going to be very hard. Right? I'm not apologizing for that. On game day, I treat my players like my children. I'm never embarrassing my kids in public, right? Because we've already laid the foundation of what that looks like in practice, the same as in my home, right? So, like, I carry that into the gym with me.
So talk to us about the kid. It's easy to deal with the Jordan Smith in a sense, right? I know it's more complicated nowadays than it's ever been, but in a sense, he's on the path. But talk to us about this 16, 15-year-old that isn't quite there yet, but so badly wants to get there, and their parents want to get there. What do we do? How do we handle these situations where the kid isn't quite good enough, but still has that dream and still has that passion?
So for I go to a high school game throughout the fall and winter, at least 4 to 5 days a week out of a 7 day week. I'm at a high school game regularly. So I'm always interacting with my parents, other parents from other programs, right? Just being a representation of the community in this space, right? I'm always giving information. And I tell parents first, always do what's best for your child, right? Because you guys have to be happy with the decision you make. There's like, I tell my parents, once you get to high school, I'm only in your life from a basketball standpoint 12 weeks. So in order for them to continue to move forward, they have to get better. You get better by playing. You get better by being coached. And playing isn't game day. I got guys right now that are at elite high schools that do not play in varsity games, but they are practicing and being prepared by an elite coach, which is allowing for them to develop. That 35 minutes, that 40 minutes, that 32 minutes in high school that guys have the opportunity to play if they play the whole game, it's not always development. So I tell my parents always put your kid in a position where they can develop. That's to your point, that 15 or 16. I will invest in a kid that parents understand where they are. We understand that, okay, he's not where we need to be right now, but they're willing to allow for him to be coached and run his own race and not compare it to others. I will invest in that kid 100% of the time.
Not to make it personal, but my daughter is a ninth grader at Sierra Canyon,
Okay,
the top 10
congratulations.
program in the country. And she could have gone a lot of places and played a lot, and she's not playing at all. And it's hard. It is really hard. It's hard for her. It's hard for me. But to your point, what is she getting every single day in practice? Playing
Yes.
against the best possible players she can get. And to be honest, for some of these kids, they need that to be able to develop, don't they? Whereas
They
other
do.
kids can go to this singular situation and be the focal point and just develop that way. We don't know. So we got to try things as parents, don't we? And as coaches and as directors. So
We
talk to
do.
us about that process for you of trying to figure out where kids can best fit into your program and fit into your team situations.
Okay, so we've already covered the grassroots space, right? So grassroots, second through six, third through six, right? I have a lot of discretion with the amount of teams I can carry. With the conception last year of the junior EYBL, which has been great. My kids, my families love it. Starting at seventh and eighth grade, they're making it a little more rigid, right? So I know this year they're allowing for us to carry 2 7th grade teams, 1 8th grade team. So that's still a chance to develop where both of my teams have 10 players. That's 20 kids we get to grow. That's 20 kids that are practicing against each other that are getting great coaching. So now I'm starting to see Nike start to be more invested in the younger age groups, which is also going to start to change the dynamics of how we can carry teams. I know with us right now, my eighth grade, I leave for Memphis tomorrow for the junior EYBL. I currently have 12 players on this team. 12 players that are completely different. Some are better than others. Some are guys that are going to need a lot more time. But I hand selected this team to not get the best 12 in the area on purpose, to give a chance for growth. As a coach, I think you owe that to yourself as well, to not just focus on winning games. Do I enjoy losing? No, I don't. I hate losing more than I like winning. I'll admit it. But for me as a coach also and as a director, I owe it to myself and to my community to say, okay, this kid is 6'7" in the eighth grade, right? He's still getting his legs under him. He's still trying to figure out his movements because he grew 4 inches in the last 3 months. Okay, that's fine. I'll work with you. Like, I'll spend time with you. No one's going to remember eighth grade. But who's to say, by to your point, 17 and under EYBL, he's a 6'11 kid now who's been dominating high school basketball. You don't know that if you don't invest in him early.
Love that approach. And for me, what again stands out a little bit is this challenge for you and for many coaches is the game to practice ratio. Because we've both been in AU, I've seen it so many times. My daughter gets way more reps in practice than she ever does in a weekend of games. So the importance of practice is so important. So talk to us about that.
I hope you pin this because you just said something that I echo to my parents regularly, right? There is nothing but value in practice. We practice 10 hours a week, unscripted, 2 hours Tuesday, Thursday, 3 hours Saturday, Sunday. So that is 10 hours of unscripted basketball. You don't have to sub out if you don't want, right? Like, you can get every rep. You can learn through your mistakes in real time. On game day, I have a 30-minute game, right? Which a lot of times is running clock into the last 2 minutes, right? So now you think about it, you look at your positions, right? 30 times five, like simple arithmetic, 150. Then you start to think about the minutes that you allocate. There's not enough minutes for me to play everyone, not adequately for their development. Yeah, you might get a picture of your son on the court with the jersey on, but I always tell my parents, sim and I hope you pin that part. There is way more value, way more value. Like, our program, even though for some, they may not understand it, I've had the benefit to go to France and spend time at INSEPT and watch the development through that European model of 6 days of practice, one game. 5 days of practice, one day off, one game, right? Like, that's where the true value is.
Imagine if we did that in America. Like, we're already the best basketball playing country in the world. And if we started to do that stuff and put more value behind practice, like you were saying, we would have so many better players. And we see this. We see some kids that are just literally playing a game model. And the parents have bought into that, just a game model, play for multiple teams, which I want you to talk about, and then sacrifice so much of practice for just working with a trainer and then going to play games. And what are they missing? And then talk to us about why, again, the playing for multiple teams doesn't necessarily help build a better player.
Where our country right now, when it comes to basketball, has become an individual sport. That's the baseline of it, right? Like, We're developing individual players. Like other countries aren't catching us because of the amount of talent that they have. They're catching us because their kids are developing to be able to play team basketball. We're still caught up a little bit on that social media. My son needs his highlights, he needs his likes, he needs this, he needs that. That's individual. So for us to get back to where we need to get, we definitely have to understand basketball is a 5-on-5 team sport, right? I tell parents all the time, as much as you want your son to score, there are five people in front of him that want to prevent him from doing it. And there are four kids on the team that want to do the same thing he wants to do. It is very hard to focus on scoring the basketball. What's not hard? Passing and cutting, player movement, ball movement, sharing, creating space for each other so you can get two on the ball and get off and then get an open, uncontested shot. So I know that's one thing that we pride ourselves on is just being able to teach the game and convey a message. I know to your point, trainers, that's a space, right? I have nothing against trainers. I think trainers are wonderful. Right. I think everything that we do is great in moderation. We just haven't figured out how to moderate it yet. It's okay, I'm gonna play more games than I practice. Why? Because I enjoy the response that I get when I make a basket in a game. That same shot is the same shot you made in practice, though. And you get more reps at it, to be quite frank with you. It's not celebrated as much. It's two people in practice, it's 20 people in the gym. So we just got to start to, I think, strip ourselves of wanting to be liked, right? Like double entendre with the likes of social media and just focus on the essence of basketball. Like we have a model for us that doesn't work for most. Like you mentioned, the multiple team model, unique one. I've seen kids that have played for multiple teams go on to be successful. Do I think it's something that can yield long-term success? I don't. I think it's nothing more important when developing a child than structure, right? And if you're a parent that says, I'm trying to find that, this is why I have moved from team A to team B. I completely understand that. But if it becomes a team C, team D, and in the same year, team E and team F, then we have a problem.
I'm going to pin as well. You just talking about that part of it, which is like the difference between the likes in practice and games. And it's like somehow we've got to flip that and acknowledge the player in practice doing the same exact thing and being just as important. So I love that. That's such a great point. Hey, coach, a brief time out from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. Do you know which players should be taking what kind of shots? An analytics system like Hoopsalytics can help your team make better shot selection decisions. You can track every kind of shot each player takes, where the shots come from, rate the shot quality, track if the shot was contested, and see the results. For example, see which players are taking mid-range floaters and measure the results versus catch-and-shoot jumpers. As an added bonus, Hoopsalytics shot charts are fully interactive, so you can filter by shot distance, shot type, or even specific areas of the floor. Then watch video clips of all those shots or see the points per shot. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball today. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your game for free. You know, the other thing that stands out there is this kid playing on multiple teams does not learn team behavior. And ultimately, not every player is going to be the top scorer on a team if they go to college. So learning these team behaviors is something that's slipping as well because they're not playing within one culture, within one structure, within one learning throughout. And I know that's something that's valuable for playing with team takeover, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And granted, we do get kids at different times throughout their journey. Right? We are a program that does not turn away talent if the parents and the kid work for us. But we also understand that it is a marriage, right? It is a true marriage. We have to recruit the right parents and the right kids because I can't have one without the other. I can never win that car ride home, ever. So, communication, understanding what it is you want out of this and what we can offer. The idea of not building good team chemistry. I'll go a little deeper than that. You're not even able to become friends. Like, as a former athlete, you know how much fun it is to play with my friends. Like, it's hard walking in the gym as a hired gun. You are everything you do, you feel like you're on an island. You can't trust the person to the left and right of you. You're not trusting the person that's giving the direction, but you don't learn none of that because you're not able to because you're always moving.
Such a great point to understand that too. Those things. Talk to us about tryouts because I know you've had some different philosophies on tryouts, and I love this approach. Just get it done.
Yeah, I know in our market, man, our high school age groups, we will have an influx of kids come in and we post, like we do post. So it's not like we're only going after the elite of the elite. We allow for all kids to enter. Now, one thing that we do that might be a little different than most, we don't let you touch a basketball. Our tryouts is simple basketball movements at first, closeouts, defensive slides. Start to try to weed out guys that may not be further along than others so that we can start to trim some of the fat. As much as I would love to say we have 80 spots on three teams, we don't. And I can guarantee you for like our 15 and under tryout, we're going to have upwards of 70 to 80 kids coming there. And that's for three teams where a lot of times for our EYBL teams, we may have a few guys that have already played in the program. And that's going back to Coach Keith. Keith was really big on valuing families that were here. I will not tell that lie. We are always going to be a program that values the families that are invested in us. Now, if something doesn't work, whether they don't like the role that they've been given throughout and they go in a different direction, so that's different. But our tryout model, we try to give kids an opportunity, but it's an opportunity built on defense, right? Once we start to see, okay, we don't want kids to get hurt. That's why we don't get up and down right away, right? Again, if I have 80 kids in the gym and I have one that's an elite athlete and I have one that's just picking up the basketball, but he saw a team takeover tryout, he doesn't understand. Like he just knows that we're a brand and they're having tryouts, so why not go? So we always try to protect the athlete first.
Makes sense to be able to account for the individual differences within the gym at all these different ages. Let's move to the elite space then and focus mainly to start with on team building, because you reference the fact like you're going to have some elite players, and then you're going to have some players that are, again, very good. Don't get me wrong. They're potentially or probably Division I players, but they're not the elite of the elite. So talk to us about team building, putting together a team, and then managing that team and that roster.
Okay, so historically, I've been blessed to have teams where, like, I have a core of guys that have come up, right? Last year, that group that went 14-1 in the regular season, number one team in the country, like, four of those starters had been with me all throughout high school. Three of those starters had been with me all throughout middle school. This year's team is a little different. We're piecing together. And I use these examples to say, for me, no matter what, I am going to get 20 practices before we play one game. See, so that's my
So
spot.
coaches know that's not necessarily normal in this space.
Yeah, no, that's my sweet spot. We're going to start here in a few weeks. And once we start and practice again, fellas, it's a buildup, right? It's not day one is going to be this rigorous teaching and detail-oriented practice. No, day one might just be getting shots up and building chemistry amongst each other. Creating that fundamental respect with the guys in the gym, them learning my cadence, me seeing how they respond, things like that. Day 20, that practice 20 may be a mental practice where we do no contact. We're just repping things, cleaning things up because we play in a few days. But for me, that team building, the essence of creating that space and being able to hold kids accountable, it comes through practice. It comes through practice. You have to spend time with them intimately. In addition to that, we're probably going to have two or three closed door scrimmages, right? I've been blessed to have some good relationships where I partner with a few programs from around the country. They'll come in, I will go to them, and we'll have closed door scrimmages. We zero out the scoreboard after each quarter. We'll work on situational stuff. I'll allow for them to work on some things. They'll allow for us to work on some things. This all is in preparation for game day. I know everyone wants to play a ton of games. We only play the EYBL schedule. So whatever that schedule that Carlton DeBose and John Stovall comes up with, whether it's 15 games, 20 games, that is all the games we're going to play for Team Takeover. That's it.
in between sessions, take us through that. So you're talking about, okay, we're going to get 20 practices, a few scrimmages, getting into the first event. And then what are we doing in between? Because you referenced, this is such an important point that you do not play other tournaments. It's the focus is on EYBL and the focus is on player development, team development because of that, because you're not trying to play all these other events.
So in between events, right? So if we have an event this weekend, we'll come back Sunday. Monday, I'm going to watch film. I always rewatch the games, clean some things up, see what worked, see what didn't work. So that Tuesday practice, more than likely, I'm going to give them off, right? These are still student athletes, right? So like a lot of times when our season starts, they're also in the middle of their spring semester for school. School doesn't end until June. We start in April. So I'll give them off on Tuesday. I always do my weekly Zooms with my coaching staff. I have my bullet points of what we're going to cover for that upcoming Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday practice and build on that. We do full scout reports also. So like our attention to detail is a little, probably a little different than most. So going into that next session, because of the schedule has already been released, we're already starting on scouts. And I do a better job than early in my career as a head coach of delegating. So each of my coaches have their own teams. Now they'll present the scout. I'll already watch the film. We'll talk about the bullet points that we may have seen. I always tell those guys, just give me about 3 to 5 actions and give me tendencies. We're not doing a full college or NBA scout, but we'll know fundamentally what they're going to do out of ATO from a free throw, essentially. Are they pressing? Are they dropping back in zone? All those types of concepts. So like leading into the next event, again, we'll watch film. We'll bring a projector. We'll put it on the wall in practice. We'll do 10 minutes, let the kids see some of the things that we talked about in real time, and we move past it. That's one thing I tell all my coaches. Once we put it in the universe, it's over. Chris, you shot the ball horrible on Sunday. So what? That was Sunday. I'm not holding that against you when you come back in the gym.
Love that. That's such an important point to be able to, again, help players with development. The focus is not where you are, it's where you can get to and the process along the way. So you've mentioned Zooms a few times, and I think this is incredibly valuable because you're giving yourself and your team and your parents and your coaches another touch point beyond practice. So take us a little deeper into the different ways that you use Zoom to be able to connect. You mentioned it with coaches, you mentioned it with parents, all these different ways.
So for each of our EYBL groups, 15, 16, 17, we have a preseason Zoom, parents only. This lays out our practice schedule, our practice times. We email itineraries out to each event, like when we book travel and all that. So they'll have all of that. But it also gives them an understanding of how we communicate. Me being a 17 U coach, probably having, I would say, a good reputation in my community. Like they understand if their kid plays for me, that things are gonna, we'll figure it out. So the one thing I always tell my parents is my practices are all open. All my practices are open unless the kids decide differently. See, I empower my players. I do. I'll come to the team like, yo, what y'all want to do today? Today, Saturday, you want open or close? Nah, coach, can we close it? Now that car ride home might wasn't enjoyable. Or maybe sometimes just the discomfort of having the parent in the stands. I have no problem going to the parents and saying, hey, today's closed. Because and the reason I say this is the only thing I do not talk about is minutes. Minutes and shots, that's not a coach and parent thing. Like we can communicate anything else, and we lay that out even in our Zooms. If your son is struggling academically, if he needs a tutor, right, we bring our books on the road for study hall. Like you could talk to me about anything, but he played 11 minutes today. And then because the game is tomorrow, we don't know how that's going to go. Like we're not going to have that discussion after the game. We're not.
So, what stands out to me again is the consistency of communication. And this has been well researched for those that are thinking, okay, playing time is the number one thing parents care about. The number one thing, and this is Michigan State Institute of Youth Sports, they've studied this. The number one complaint parents have, and this will be no surprise to you, is the communication piece around scheduling, around understanding when times change and practices and travel and all these logistics that parents are trying to manage is the number one thing. So what you're doing is you're essentially ensuring that these parents understand fully and transparently exactly what's happening on a week to week, month to month, year to year basis.
And I clearly I didn't have the information that you just provided, so thank you for that.
But
But
you
I
knew
do
it.
I did as a parent myself, I know how important it is to communicate and be communicated with, right? So I do not take that for granted. And I try my best to give access to all, right? Again, I'm a phone call away, but I just want to make sure what we're communicating is constructive and something that is one, allowing for your son to grow, but also allowing for the other kids in the environment to also have a chance to grow.
So, talk to me about adaptability. Let's just say that you've been at all levels and you've been around all types of players. So, talk to us about adaptability as a coach.
I think that's if you want to be in this business, you have to. Like, it is a core value that you have to learn to integrate into yourself. One thing that I always echo to my staff is like, the wins go to the players, the losses go to the coaches. So, like, we have to have a short memory. We have to be able to move on, as well as enjoying this space. As one class goes, I have another class coming. That class that's coming is completely different than the class that I had prior. So, how am I going to develop this group so that they can have the best environment and be a part of the best environment? So, I know for me, one thing that I have done to just grow as an individual coach, like I also reach out to the people that I trust. Me and you have had intimate conversations off camera. Like, these are things that also allow for me to grow and develop and learn how to navigate this space. Because it is, if you don't adapt, you will not be able to sustain yourself. You will not.
Which also connects to open-mindedness, which I appreciate about you. And to be honest, coach, a lot of people said a lot of things to me before I got involved in the EYBL space. And I'll say essentially none of them have been true, right? Coaches have been open-minded, coaches have been hungry, coaches have been curious. They don't always agree, and we don't have to always agree, but that's generally the case. So I really appreciate you sharing that. I look at your college career too, and it's like you had to be adaptable. You were at a lot of different programs with a lot of different perspectives as well. Talk to us about how your college experience has helped shape you even more as a director and as a coach.
Oh man, I was blessed. I worked for some great guys, man. Like Joe Dooley, who's now in a back at Kansas as an assistant. Will Wade, who's currently the head coach at NC State, who everyone knows, he's fiery, he's passionate. Johnny Dawkins, who played at Duke, Coach K's first McDonald All-American. And then Danny Manning, all-time leading scorer at Kansas, who I worked for at Wake. They were all different. And the one thing that I will say, and I was blessed, and I say this to any basketball coach, any player that has aspirations to get to that level, you have to go in and you have to be humble and open-minded. Like, titles did not matter to me, and they still don't. I do not care. I am here to work and to serve. The minute we commit to this space, we are civil servants. That is the reality once you commit to being a coach at any level. And for me, I was blessed because I had guys that wanted to develop me. I did. I may have not been ready for some of the responsibilities that were given to me, but I respected them, I appreciated them, and I figured it out. I did. So for me, I'll tell anybody, I was just blessed to be around great people.
And this is something I think that stands out about you and your program as well, is the sideline demeanor of you and your coaching staff. You know what I'm saying? He's laughing for those that are listening. That's something that has to be worked on, right? It's not something that just happens. So talk to us about that piece and helping shape that, because I think a lot of programs can benefit from that.
It's so interesting. And you may know the name. Io plays for Minnesota Timberwolves now.
Oh, I assume him. Yeah.
Io DeSumo, I recruited him. And I will never forget his mom used to always say, I have an alter ego. She was like, yo, like when I come to practice, you're one way, but then outside of basketball, you're completely different. I use that as an example because it goes back to my point I made earlier in the conversation. On game day, I do not believe embarrassing my players. Those are my kids, right? I've had games, heated games, championship games at the EYBL level where referees will walk past me and be like, Coach, are you okay? You haven't said anything. I said, oh, Coach, I tell them, oh, Mr. Ref, I'm fine. You guys are doing a great job. Like, I do not believe in, I'm not the show. My kids are prepared those 20 hours, those 10 hours a week. Like leading up to those 20 practices that I have to have that are my sweet spots. Like, though, my kids are prepared during that time. So on game day, my staff and myself, we conduct ourselves a certain way because we are confident in the work that we have done.
So this is something that I've had to learn For sure. And I think a lot of coaches have had to learn. I used to be pretty nuts somewhat on the sidelines. And certainly now coaching AU in this space, man, look, I've got the same thing from parents and from officials or directors and stuff. Hey, are you coaching? I'm like, me sitting here is actually better for the team than me standing up. Yeah. It's like, you got to know yourself and know how you manage it. But that's also something that needs to be explained. So I really got good at explaining it to parents and to players, especially saying, hey, listen, I can act that way, but just know I'm just as competitive sitting down as I am standing up.
No, you are absolutely correct. It's so funny because I get complimented on my bench, the quorum, and how I carry myself a lot. But I always tell those guys, like, trust me, outside, if we're in practice, it's totally different. On game day, I'll call Chris, come on, I'll call you over. I'll say what I got to say to you. I'm still coaching my guys. I'm not running up and down the sidelines.
No, there are many conversations, respectful conversations. But sometimes, again, those small moments where you're one-on-one with someone and you're telling Chris, hey, do a better job. Those are more direct than anything you could possibly yell across the court.
Yep. Again, and I think for coaches that are listening, that's where you build your trust, not only in your players, but in yourself, right? Like, we are taking on a responsibility to lead the next generation of basketball, right? The only way you can do that is if you believe in what you're doing and you're confident in what you're doing. And the only way you become confident in anything is by doing the work when no one else is watching, right? One thing a platform like yours and so many others offer, there's an abundance of information out here.
It really does, I think, point back to adaptability, especially in this social media era. Of the way that you act really does show up everywhere. So people are watching, and people are watching how you interact with your players and different things like that. And again, you're not sacrificing competitiveness, especially in a program like yours, because you're coaching them. There's practice. The problem, I think, for a lot of coaches, especially in the AAU space, is they are practicing. So everything they're trying to do in a game is just heightened. Because they didn't do the work, to your point. Jamil, another thing that stands out a little bit is your willingness and your openness here to be able to share, as you said, the secret sauce. So talk to us about that in this space, how that has been shaped for you.
I just think it goes back to, like, trust and being confident. And I say this to all coaches at every level. Do not be afraid to have synergy amongst your peers. We are all developing kids from our community. So hoarding information or trying to hold on to a player or, oh, I'm not going to help this program because it's going to affect mine. If the essence of what we do is to help grow and develop the game, you have to work with others. None of us can do it alone. So I think that's one thing that I would love to see continuously shape and change in our communities, is like just the synergy and sharing in a developmental way for us as coaches, because the kids do it. The kids do it organically because they all go to school together. We become the deterrent in that situation a lot of times. A lot of the kids that play for respective programs in their communities, they all play against each other in high school. They're friends. They're going to the movies and the mall on the weekends together. But then you have coaches that can't work well together that are representing these kids. It doesn't make sense.
Such an important point and a great way to be able to start to wrap this up, Coach. Man, I can't thank you enough. I love being in this space. I love learning from people like you who have had such expertise in this space. And it's just tremendous to be able to share this with the world. And thank you so much for sharing the game with us.
Chris, I genuinely thank you. I do. If there's ever anything I can do to help you, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for having me.